Hello, good morning, and welcome. It's Friday, the 9th of July, 2021, and I'm back, finally, after 3 months, with today's episode number 191. Now, I can explain the extended absence. I know I had said when last we spoke, I was going to be gone for maybe a month or so, give or take. And this was, of course, recorded back in my home state of California. Well, I can explain the absence because, well, I'm not in California anymore. That's right. My wife and I have finally pulled the trigger to uproot our lives, and we have left our beloved California for the East Coast. That's right. We are now just outside of Boston, one of our favorite cities in the world. Now, there's a long, convoluted story as to how and why we ended up out here, but suffice to say, we did it because we could. Wanted some change, wanted some variety. Love it out here. I'm a huge fan of the history, the culture, the tech scene, frankly, not least of which the burgeoning AV scene as well. And speaking of which, I mentioned to you a while back that I had been appointed the Mobility Initiative Chair for Founders Network. And well, since relocating out here to Boston, I've also been doubly tasked with filling the role of Boston Chapter Director for Founders Network. So as an aside, if you're a tech founder in the Boston area or eager to relocate to the Boston area, whether or not you're in the mobility space, definitely reach out to me on LinkedIn and we can have a chat. Anyway, so back to Boston then. And yes, we do love the seasons. It reminds my wife very much of her homeland of Romania. And to be perfectly blunt, because I get this all the time, are we ready for the snow? The answer is yes. Even if we were not ready for the snow, look, if you have the choice between snow or fires, I'm sorry to say, snow wins every time. I mean, last summer's 7 weeks of smoke-filled skies back in California was a decidedly traumatizing thing, really. And to see the exponential, the literally exponential rate at which the fire risk and burned acreage has been increasing over the past decade, I'm sorry to say, it's just not sustainable. It's funny. I've been talking a lot lately with folks. You know, one thing I don't understand is that whenever you read or discuss issues about climate change and the environment, everything is always talking in terms of come 2050 or come 2100. You know, the end of the century, things are going to be this bad, this awful, and this many people will be sinking and drowning due to sea level rise. And this is all very true indeed. But I think it kind of misses the bigger picture, which is to focus on the here and the now. Because take a look, everybody. Climate change is here now. It's already having disastrous impact. I mean, if more than 100 people dead in the Pacific Northwest caused by the massive, unprecedented 1 in 10,000 year heat wave that just pummeled, baked that part of the world. I mean, if that's not evidence enough, I mean, I don't know what it is. I think calculations now show that the heat wave out there, and indeed the one that's about to strike again this weekend, is essentially impossible but for climate change. I think it was something like 150 to 200 times more probable due to climate change. Now, I know you're probably wondering, why am I going off on a bit about climate change and the environment here on this podcast? And I'm understanding if some of you may have tuned out, but this then kind of segues quite neatly, really, into something else I'd like to touch on, which does perfectly lead into a discussion that we're going to have on today's episode, which is all about, tangentially about the environment and with respect to electric vehicles, which, as we've always said, really slots in neatly with any discussion about AVs, because again, any company developing an AV is also developing an EV and vice versa. And that particular point I want to touch on is, our firm has a new name and we are no longer Hogue & Co., not least of which, because that was a bit of a phonetic awkwardism, to coin a phrase. Instead, we are now Motive, as in Motive Mobility, as in, I don't know, motivating from A to B. We are motivated to get you from A to B. We are all about, I could say we're about the motive, about how to get to point B from A. But regardless, puns aside, we are indeed now fully rebranded. with a flashy, shiny, bluish logo. We are indeed Motive. So our overarching purpose, our mission, our whole raison d'être remains the same. But let me actually just read for you. It's very, very short, I promise. Give me like a minute here. I'll read to you a newsletter that we sent out that you may or may not have received, basically kind of explaining the background for this change and kind of what it means for our firm holistically, but also, as you'll see, I think, what it the sort of impact it may indeed have on the podcast going forward. So Motive, we are connected autonomous electric vehicles and new mobility through a climate-focused lens. So after an exhilarating 2 years as Hogan & Co., we have decided to rebrand our firm to reflect both our continued commitment to motivating change in the mobility space and the very motive for why we do what we do to expedite a transition to a sustainable mobility future and to help remedy our imminent climate crisis. So today we're extremely excited to share with you that we are now Motive. By the way, this was written, of course, back in May 19th. Of this year. So as we closed out 2020, we realized we had to align our efforts with clean energy, including everything from energy transition and urban charging infrastructure to viable OEM solutions and sound economic analysis. So while we will continue to provide the same unparalleled guidance that you trust and rely upon across the entire ecosystem of connected autonomous electric vehicles and new mobility generally, we will now be doing so through this new climate-focused lens. Our vision and continuing mission at Motive is to help you improve our cities, fast-track your brilliant innovations in mobility, and of course, transition to a fully renewable energy future. So that's the backstory on our name change and why we are what we are and how we're going to kind of slightly reposition ourselves or indeed refocus ourselves going forward. So again, the overarching theme will absolutely, undeniably still be all about the AV revolution, but with it, of course, everything about EV mobility, but all of it taken through a lens of climate change. Right, so there you have it. Enough about that backstory. You can check us out, of course, at our new website, motivemobility.com. It's spelled M-O-T-I-V, mobility.com. Or if you just go to hogandco.com, it'll, of course, redirect you. We've also, likewise, obviously updated all of our social media accounts accordingly, which are all Motive Mobility. Again, that's M-O-T-I-V, mobility. Right, so today then, let's dive right in, because 7-Eleven gets thirsty for charging. Cruise can now give passengers rides, and Volvo gets all LiDAR-y. All this right now. All right, so this is something I didn't see coming. I've talked quite a bit in the past about the viability, although I guess not so much on this podcast, but I've certainly discussed it with others, about the viability of and you know gas stations sort of future-proofing their own businesses, really, to an electric future by starting to install charge points at the gas stations. I mean, why not? An example of this in practice is my hometown of Mill Valley, just north of San Francisco, where there's a gas station just as you exit the 101 freeway. And they've got a hydrogen fueling pump right there. And yes, I actually have seen it used on a few occasions, believe it or not. But in any event, I think installing charge points at gas stations makes a lot of great sense, not least of which because, if I'm not mistaken, the vast majority of revenue for gas stations comes not from the gas itself, but rather from the convenience store selling all of its admittedly awful food and drink. By the way, for those of you listening in Europe, you have to realize if you've not yet visited the US and experienced our gas stations, you'll understand why I said awful food and drink. For those of you in the US who have not been to Europe, well, gas station pit stops are generally quite nice, at least cross-country ones are, with genuinely fantastic food and drink options, full sit-down cafes, etc. Really great stuff. Some of them you can even buy like deli meats and butchery meats and so forth. Really quite special. Anyway, but so because the vast majority of the revenue comes actually from the convenience store at the gas station, not so much from the gas, then it makes really great sense, honestly, to encourage people to stop by and actually spend some time there. Although now that I say that, as an aside, it'd be even better if they actually had sort of a sit-down environment to spend yet more money. But what better way to do that to at least encourage this than with charging stops? So I've discussed this for gas stations. What I didn't see coming was something admittedly quite similar, at least in theory anyway, is convenience stores generally, even those without gas pumps, namely 7-Eleven, and that's exactly what they're doing. So I guess I missed the memo. It turns out that 7-Eleven had already installed a network of some 22 charging stations at 14 different stores across 4 different states. I had no idea about this. Totally slipped by me. And apparently now they've announced 7-Eleven are planning to open a whopping 500 charging ports by the end of next year, of 2022. So this is actually pretty great. Again, it kind of makes a lot of sense to me why not do that. The initial upfront cost is reasonably small compared, frankly, to installing, say, a gas pump, for instance, with all of its plumbing and infrastructure and so forth. So installing charging stations is relatively trivial. There's a few things I'm not really clear on, though, and I don't fully understand. I mean, again, first of all, just to be clear, it's great that they're going to, well, from consumers' points of view, it's great that if you're an EV owner, having the option to charge up if you hop into a 7-Eleven is great. Although, I just thought of something, though. I'm kind of curious, the demographic, those who own EVs, the vast majority of which tend to be Teslas, do they tend to stop for any reason whatsoever at 7-Eleven? I'm going to go out on a limb here and say probably not. However, this is okay, because here's the point. These are not Tesla chargers. These are likely going to be supplied by ChargePoint. So these then should be accessible by just about every other EV on the market, right? So for instance, the fantastic, more or less anyway, Volkswagen ID.4 comes to mind. But anyway, I'm sort of getting off point. Here's one thing I'm a little concerned about, or at least confused about, is if indeed it's ChargePoint, then it's probably going to be something in the 60 to 125 kilowatt range. So basically, not really that fast, right? So not awful, but also not terribly quick charging. To me, this seems a bit weird. I mean, again, 7-Eleven is not a place you go to sit down and spend 20 or 30 minutes. It's a place you literally run in and run out, frankly, usually as quickly as you possibly can. It's very rarely the case that you actually want to spend an extended period of time in a 7-Eleven. So having somewhat slow charge points, to me, kind of almost defeats the point. I mean, it's a bit of a chicken and egg, right? I mean, 7-Eleven wants to encourage more people to stop in and buy stuff. Again, I think it'd be better if they spent yet more time. That then, of course, would require a massive kind of rethink about how 7-Eleven pitches itself. Faster charging points would encourage people to actually plug in and stick around for 20 or 30 minutes. That, I think, would be a lot better. Plugging in for the, 5 minutes or so it typically takes to pop into 7-Eleven and come back out again, you're going to get such a trivial bit of additional juice that it just doesn't make any sense. So I guess what I'm trying to say is I don't really get the practical value here, other than some sort of bit of publicity that 7-Eleven gets out of this. But one thing's for sure, these charge points are decidedly not super gulp slurpees or whatever they're called. All right, so this is pretty cool. So Cruise, the GM-owned autonomous vehicle company we've talked about quite a bit in the past, based in San Francisco. So they've just taken a pretty big step. They've received the necessary permit issued by the CPUC, that's the California Public Utilities Commission. They are now allowed to drive around passengers in their driverless test vehicles. And when I say driverless, they are indeed literally, truly, actually driverless. There is no organic human sitting in the driver's seat. These are true autonomous vehicles. There is a backup driver remotely, but for all intents and purposes, these are AVs, and they can now shuttle around human passengers. The key limit, however, to all this is that they cannot be for revenue. So Cruise is able to shuttle these passengers around, but they are non-revenue service. So that kind of makes sense, right? They're obviously in testing phase still, and in order to get to the revenue phase, they need yet an additional permit. So the way it kind of works, it's a bit convoluted, but basically you've got the California DMV, the Department of Motor Vehicles, and you've got the CPUC, the California Public Utilities Commission. They each have to issue the relevant permits. You need both from the California DMV and the CPUC. And so in this case, then what crews have got is the CPUC permit. So basically then what this means is that crews have now joined the likes of Baidu, Nuro, Waymo, Zoox, and other companies in California, which are allowed to do driverless testing. Now, that said, it is only Nuro, which is allowed to do revenue service, but it's a bit of a trick because Nuro, if you recall, they developed those adorable little delivery droids, which kind of scuttle along, along sidewalks and so forth. And so they are obviously not carrying human passengers, just goods and foodstuffs, right? And so they're able to circumvent that so they can do autonomous delivery for revenue. Nevertheless, this is a fantastic next step for Cruise. Again, I've gone on the record many times being a huge fan of everything Cruise have been up to. I think they have probably the highest chance of legitimate success. I still maintain, and I will say again what I've said every other time I've talked about Cruise, which is that especially now considering the, shall we say, questionable state of things in San Francisco from a transportation point of view, from a frankly, from a crime point of view, I'm not going to get into that now, not to mention the ongoing, ever bloated budgeting and timing with respect to the new Muni bus transit corridor they've been developing on Van Ness Avenue through the city of San Francisco. Now more than ever is the perfect time to start leveraging those bus lanes for use with crews and really focus on the, shall we say, the level four approach, the kind of geolocated, geofenced driving of these vehicles. I think it's a much better alternative to get more people more familiar with what's what. But regardless, I'm really excited to see this next step, and I'll keep you posted as I learn more about them. All right, so to close things out today, I want to have a chat about Volvo. And this is kind of a big deal to me because I don't know if any of you know this, but I'm sure I may have mentioned it once or twice in the past, but perhaps not. So this podcast actually was actually born out of a blog that I had started quite a few years ago, honestly. I want to say back in 2015, perhaps. It was called Innovately. In fact, it still lives over at innovately.wordpress.com if you're curious to check it out. And one of my last articles there, if I remember correctly, was all about Volvo. And at the time, I was writing about the then very futuristic Vision 2020 goal that Volvo had. And I was really quite enthusiastic about everything they were up to. I was a huge fan from as an automotive enthusiast generally about the then new Volvo XC90, which my wife and I did briefly own before it totally bricked itself and was repatriated back to Sweden. True story. But in any event, so that was one of the last things I had written then. In the years since, obviously, I abandoned that blog to focus on this podcast. And here we are now in 2021, and I'm very thrilled to share with you this fantastic news by Volvo that they've just announced their next generation flagship, first of all, is going to be fully electric and crucially, impressively, awesomely, it's going to be kitted out with LiDAR. Yeah, this is a pretty huge deal. So to be super clear, we're talking here about the next generation XC90. It's going to debut next year in 2022, and it will be equipped with LiDAR. So to put things in kind of temporal perspective, so the XC90 that we know and love today, which I still think is one of the most bleeding beautiful bits of metal on wheels you can still buy today, that debuted back in 2015, if I'm not mistaken. So here we are now, what, 7 years later, it's going to be next year when the next generation XC90 comes out. Can't wait to see what that thing looks like. And it's going to have LiDAR. So this obviously is a huge deal. Now, one of the things that made the XC90 such a big deal when it first debuted, and one of the reasons why my wife and I had bought and enjoyed ours for the mere 2 weeks or so that we got to enjoy it, was precisely because it was the best thing you could get that was big, SUV-ish, and had such an incredible bit of safety kit. At the time, and I believe it was the only thing on wheels that actually offered a very limited bit of hands-off semi-autonomous driving. It was, as I recall, limited to something like 35 miles an hour or so, in a straight line, more or less, with some very, very mild bends. You could also eventually do so on freeways for a few seconds at a time, again, only with very mild bends. Basically, what it was pretty high-end lane keep assist, which, again, was a similar sort of technology to what we had in our Mercedes GLC 300. So Tesla Autopilot, it was not, for better or worse. I can hear all of you saying. But look, it was really great at the time, and it was a fantastic stepping step. It was a fantastic next step to where we're headed now, which is a LiDAR-equipped XC90. This obviously is a really big deal because, I mean, I don't need to remind you of, you know, the ongoing media gossip and frankly the questioning behind Elon and Tesla's decision never to embrace LiDAR, and indeed more recently to also fully rid themselves of radar. Yeah, in case you missed it, and this is obviously a discussion for, I guess, the next episode we'll do shortly, is, and we must have this discussion really, it's about so Tesla have decided they're going to, you know, they don't actually have radar in any of their new Model 3 and Model Y vehicles. So our Model Y, which was one of the earliest builds, it does have radar. But all the new builds do not have radar. That's right. Tesla is now completely vision only. It only uses camera vision for its autopilot system. As an aside, in case you're wondering then, it kind of raises the question, what's going to happen with existing vehicles that do have radar, like ours? I mean, in other words, if all the cars rolling off the assembly line now, henceforth, are vision only and not using radar, and if those vehicles with radar, like ours, continue to use radar, what does that mean about the non-radar equipped vehicles? Alternatively, if indeed radar is not necessary, then shouldn't our radars be effectively switched off, if only to have some marginal power savings benefit, right? So I find this all really quite fascinating. But anyway, Volvo, though, embracing LiDAR fully, which, again, I'm really not surprised. We had discussed quite a bit in the past about how many companies were looking to do this. BMW was supposed to have partnered up with Innoviz, the Israeli LiDAR company, to release their first, and the market's first, LiDAR-equipped passenger vehicle. It was supposed to be a 3 Series coming out, well, this year. As far as I know, that hasn't happened. So for Volvo to do this coming out next year, that's really pretty fantastic. And here's where things get really interesting and super cool. Volvo is saying it's going to be a level 4 system. And moreover, this is all going to be standard equipment. Yeah, that's right. This is not going to be some option you have to check off some ridiculously bloated options sheet that most car manufacturers give you. This is going to be standard equipment. So it's going to be standard like your seatbelt, like your airbag, like your ABS brakes. This Volvo is going to come standard with level 4 capable LiDAR equipped autonomous driving. So a bit of background on the system itself. We know that it's being co-developed by Luminar and Volvo's subsidiary called Zenseact, which frankly I've never actually heard about until right now. And it'll actually be available on other vehicles too, including China's SAIC. So because it's level 4, Volvo are saying that it's going to be a completely, you know, eyes off, brain switched off, hands off operation on highways. And this means it's not going to require any supervision whatsoever. Obviously, though, this is, as always, very regulatory dependent. We don't know kind of where this will be allowed. This reminds me, we need to have a discussion next time about what Germany has just done with respect to its embrace of autonomous vehicle driving regulations. Yeah, we'll discuss this next time, I think. But in any event, what is a big deal is, again, the fact that Volvo have got this car coming out with standard LiDAR, level 4 capability, at least theoretically anyway, and that it will be available by next year. To be clear, there are other automakers that are still planning on getting this done. I know that we've talked a bit in the past about how BMW are going to do this with a 3 Series in partnership with Israel-based Innoviz. Don't know whatever happened to that. There are other vehicles that should be on the market later this year, potentially. So they may not necessarily be the first with LiDAR on the market, but certainly they're going to be amongst the first. But again, crucially, that it'll be standard is what makes this such a big deal. And speaking of regulation, another thing you really mustn't forget, and this kind of coincides with Volvo's Vision 2020 that we talked about at the beginning of this episode, that I first discussed in my blog years ago. Part of this Vision 2020 promise is that Volvo are going to accept full responsibility, full liability for anything and everything that goes wrong. This is a really huge deal, and it's something that goes very far indeed to getting these things on streets and in consumers' hands. Again, this is a whole nother discussion perhaps for another time, and we can revisit it for sure, but just something really important, I think, to keep in mind. Anyway, that is a wrap for today, and obviously for this week. Thank you so much again for tuning in. I know it's been, 3 months since last we spoke, but really great to have you back. Until next time, that'll be next week. Thank you so much for listening. Have a wonderful weekend. Take care. Bye-bye.